sons and daughters. I'm John Miller, and this is Locked On Mizzou, your destination for Missouri Tigers football and basketball 5 days a week. And yes, I am your totally non-objective Mizzou mafioso. And joining me today, once again, is Blake Stark. Blake, how you doing, man?
Doing good. Doing good. Excited to get back in here and talk some more Mizzou stuff.
Cool. Yeah, me too. Yeah, we have a lot of fun on this show. And certainly if you're listening and you enjoy, please feel free to subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, wherever you find your shows. And heck, they even tell me over at Locked On Podcasts that if you tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On Mizzou, that'll get you home as well. So hey, yeah, share it. 5-star review, all that good stuff. But hey,
I go back to the office and see if we can pull this up on the old
home. I've just realized I haven't done that experiment yet, but soon enough it'll work. I'll bet you that. I don't even know if I'm officially out yet, but we're certainly doing the show. But anyway, you know, could you believe that Mizzou was... Did that not surprise you a little bit? So we're going to actually start with basketball here today because that's kind of the breaking news. The media came out with its preseason basketball poll. Missouri picked to finish 13th out of 14 teams in the conference. I got to be honest, that kind of stunned me a little bit. I was thinking maybe they'd pick us to finish lower than what I was expecting, say 9th, 10th, but my gosh, 13th, only had a Vanderbilt who was 0-19 last year. Hard to believe, huh?
Yeah, I was surprised. I mean, initially when you look at us being second to last in the conference preseason by the media, it sort of seems like a slap in the face. Especially being kind of close to the program, and it seems like there's a lot of momentum around the program here in Columbia with who we're bringing back. And just kind of initially and viscerally, I was taken a little bit aback by where they stuck us. I went back and did some, you know, kind of looked over real briefly, you know, the results of who we played last year to see where we'd fall out. So I think my opinion now is kind of that the bottom half of the conference, probably Vanderbilt still. Although, you know, I'm half surprised they didn't stick Vanderbilt up, you know, in the middle just because they hired Jerry Stackhouse and because now they're going to get recruits. And
all sure.
That, you know what I mean? Like, that seems to be the preseason hype machine seems to be the big driver of where they seed these. Of course, Kentucky's going to be number one every
right.
year until they're not.
Well, I think that put Georgia ahead of where you might expect, too. I think I saw they were slotted in at 9th or so, which may be a little higher than you might expect based on last year. But like you say, I think they had a 5-star player last year and maybe one more coming in this year as well. So, again, that's kind of what college basketball is all based on these days, right?
I feel like you could have given Georgia another 5-star last year and they probably still would have finished where they did.
That's what I'm saying.
I remember going in there and we held them to 45 points or something like that on their home court. It was one of the more dominant wins that we had last year. But, yeah, so it's tough to – I think the top four look pretty well set to me. Kentucky, Florida, LSU, and LSU's got a lot of talent. Auburn, I think, is a lot of talent. Tennessee, to me, lost a lot.
Sure.
I mean,
yeah,
that's a whole lot.
They're almost being picked fifth just kind of by default.
Yeah, just because where they've been. And you know, maybe they are. Maybe there's enough of a program underneath there that Rick Barnes has built. But
right.
That was a real top-heavy team that was – and honestly, that's a team that didn't get a lot of credit until they were winning a ton of games. Because it's a team sort of built like the Missouri team is, with a bunch of 3-star guys that are, you know, guys that are going to be around for their entire careers, and that took them a while to get them to the top, but now that they got to the top and well, almost to the top, and those guys have kind of run through there. I mean, I guess you got this lingering effect that's going to keep them at the top, but I think from 5 down to 12 or so, it could probably be a toss up, and I'd probably stick us at 7 or 8 just to see what we have. But I mean, no, I've seen, like, I think the Sagarin ratings have us like 17th in the country.
Yeah, which is, again, surprising on the other end. It's surprising right. to see us that high in some of these, yeah, like you say, the Sagarin advanced statistic type rankings. I've been stunned to see how high some of those have had us.
Well, but those, I mean, they're looking at, you know, scoring returning. They're
sure.
looking at
Drew Smith's production
yeah, Drew
from
Smith.
Last year.
Yeah,
translating well.
Exactly. So, you know, Missouri is bringing a ton back, and really you're losing Jordan Geist. You figure that hopefully Drew Smith is, and I'm sure we're going to have more in-depth basketball previews and things like that, but there's a ton coming back from Missouri. Missouri was playing a lot better at the end of the year last year and getting, you know, guys like Torrance Watson to come, you know, kind of coming into their own, and they didn't have Mark Smith, and they didn't have Drew Smith. You know, maybe Jeremiah Tillman takes a step, but there's a lot there to like, I think, certainly enough that they should be higher than 13th.
Yeah, I think one thing, though, to really, really watch in the next month or two if you're big into Mizzou basketball, and surely you are if you're listening to this show, you got to still look at Mark Smith's ankle, and it's too bad that we're still saying that after months. Now, I got to be honest, I don't know his total prognosis or anything, so maybe he is right on schedule. Just for an ankle injury to be lingering this long. Now, I believe he had what's now becoming a little bit more of a popular sort of surgery that tries to fix high ankle sprains, if I'm not wrong. It almost like compresses the bone a little bit at the end of the day. And this is a new procedure, and it seems to be fairly effective from what I can see. I'm just a little bit concerned that the recovery still seems to be lingering all the way from last season now into preseason of this year. I just want everybody to realize, I'm sure you realize how important Mark Smith was, but if he's, you know, again, a banged up type player, as much as I love our guard depth, I don't think he's a piece that we can afford to live without if we're going to be any type of tournament top 25, reaching our ceiling type team. Don't you agree?
Sure. I mean, he was shooting 48% from three when he went down, and I think, you know, he's a two-way player. He's secure with the ball, and he defends, and he's got experience. So that's a guy that you can't afford to lose at all. I'm surprised it's just this thing has been going on so long.
Exactly.
I remember that, you know, 2 days after the injury happened, I was getting lunch at this Jimmy John's across the street over here, and he walked in with a teammate and didn't have a cast on, didn't have an air cast, wasn't even really limping.
Right.
I thought that he was going to be back the next game.
Sure.
And then he missed a month, and then he came back for 2 or 3 minutes for one game, and then they shut him down for the rest of the season. So the whole thing's been kind of interesting.
Exactly.
Just weird.
Just mystery. A pattern of setbacks, a pattern of, oh, let's rest him for a while, and then it just never quite gets there. So apparently maybe he needed this procedure, and hopefully the optimistic take will be long run, this will be what he needs, and he'll be fine.
Yeah, maybe has he been with the St. Louis Cardinals medical staff over the season?
Is
that what's been going on?
Too soon, Blake, too soon. Well, they're not out of it yet, but anyway, you know what? I've also got some good little tidbits from Pro Football Focus on Cale Garrett coming up, and also we'll talk a little bit more about Mizzou football. But first, I want to tell you all, you know what? This company, this podcast, I should say, if your company is interested in targeting men between the ages of 18 and 44, well, quite honestly, you should be sponsoring this here podcast, because Locked On Mizzou is listened to by 98% men, and 80% of those men are between the ages of 18 and 44. So with that on top of our reasonable rates compared to the radio industry, it's really an offer you can't refuse. So email me at lockedonmizzou@gmail.com. So, Blake, with that being said, let's get into some more Tiger football, shall we? You know, I thought it was cool to see Pro Football Focus, you know, the institution, for lack of a better term, that's coming to me at the moment, that does their grades every week. They grade out every player in pro football, every player in college football, to an astonishing degree, honestly. Well, I thought they had a great note on Cale Garrett here, who made their sort of mid-season, quarter season, whatever it was, All-American team. They said, "We won't see any more of Garrett in 2019 after suffering his pectoral injury. But in 5 games, Garrett was arguably the nation's best coverage linebacker." Now, how about that for a sentence? Because, you know, I think last year you and I talked about how that was probably his weakness. I mean, he was absolutely tremendous against the run, especially against Kentucky last year when he was basically a one-man wrecking crew on their 4th-and-1 attempts. But the fact that now I'm going to continue here with Pro Football Focus, it says, in fact, his 91.4 coverage grade is the best mark among linebackers, as he had nearly 2 pick-six moments against Troy, coming 1 yard shy of 2 interceptions returned for a touchdown. In total, targeted 12 times this season, allowing 33 yards, finishing with 3 picks, 2 pass breakups, and a 30.6 passer rating. Not too shabby.
I'd like to know what his interception return yardage is versus the yardage that he allowed.
Right, what's his DVOA on returns?
I mean, yeah. I bet he's got 150 yards in return. Interception return yardage.
Yeah, and one of those catches was one-handed, too. Yeah. It's not like they just threw it right to him. I mean, Cale was just – I just love seeing those numbers, really putting in context just how good he was. It wasn't just Mizzou fans. I mean, everybody was noticing how good Cale Garrett was.
We questioned that as, you know, one of the, you know, we liked the Mizzou defense on paper going, you know, into the season, and we thought Nick Bolton would make a difference in coverage, and I think he's been very good as well. But I think, you know, we mentioned that we had no doubt about Garrett being a tackler, you know, sure tackler and support the run game, but we questioned whether or not he could do enough in coverage to show up the middle of that defense, and I think he did more than we could have ever hoped. It's a damn shame that he's not going to be doing it for the rest of the year.
Yeah, without question. And well, speaking of Nick Bolton, he made second team All-American on that PFF team and on that PFF article. And so did Jordan Elliott, who's also been excellent. I went into his season a little bit yesterday as well. Also, Albert O finished, he's so far as AP's second team All-American in their thing that they just released. So, you know, a lot of positives from Mizzou thus far. It's still kind of amazing that we lost to Wyoming, of course, and it's now got people saying, after the Plumlee kid for Ole Miss ran effectively, obviously, for them, it's now got some people asking if Mizzou's defense has a running quarterback problem. What do you think about that?
I think running quarterbacks give everybody problems. I think that there's a reason that when you go back to high school football.
And especially going back to the Wyoming game, too.
I mean, just everywhere and at every level, I think the hardest thing you can, even playing video games against your buddies. I mean, you sub in Michael Vick at quarterback, like you used to do back in the day. Anybody's going to have problems with a guy that can, you drop back and see that spacing and take off running or giving you multiple looks out of the backfield. So I don't think that's a unique problem for anybody to have.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, in Wyoming, that problem looked exacerbated because of two or three real bad missed tackles that led to those two huge touchdown runs.
Indeed.
You take those away, I don't think we have that big of a problem. And the, you know, the Ole Miss quarterback had success running against us, but what was it? It was 100, you said it was
143 yards, I want to say, probably 20-something carries. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but
I mean, that's some success, but that's
certainly successful, but it's not like, yeah, combined with the fact that he wasn't really throwing the ball, didn't worry me that much. Man, if you could have combined Corral and Plumlee into one guy, then you'd have had something, because Corral was a pretty impressive thrower at times.
Yeah, I'm not worried about Missouri's run defense, really, against quarterbacks. That's not a problem for me. That's not even something that had registered yet. I mean, any team that's focuses a running quarterback is going to get yards rushing with their quarterback. You know, Wyoming didn't get any passing yards essentially out of their quarterback. So you'd hope that, you know, if you're going to give up some rushing yards to a rushing quarterback, you can still maintain pass coverage and not give up, you know, wide open lobs and things because you're losing container.
Sure.
When you're selling out for run sport. So I think we've done a decent job of, you know, of keeping them one dimensional.
Yeah.
Which is
I agree.
You know, which is all you can really hope for. And Kentucky's going to have to run. I think they bring a wide receiver in as a quarterback last week. So
yes, absolutely.
I'm sure they're going to have, you know, that's going to be something that we'll see.
Yeah, they're down
in Lexington.
Yeah, that's like their fourth man that they've had in that position. Maybe third, but it's if you're playing a wide receiver, I've almost got to be thinking it's your fourth guy or at quarterback at this point.
Yeah, but I mean, other than that, I don't know that there are any huge running threats coming up on the schedule that pose a, you know, a huge challenge, or at least looking from the.
Yeah, I'm with you. That didn't necessarily strike me as something that I was incredibly worried about either. But again, this is going to have to play out over the season if it even does, frankly, depending on who we play. But I'm still more worried about the guy who can sit in the pocket and just actually pick you apart a little bit from the pocket and maybe buy time with his feet as well. Not so much pure scrambling, pure design run, Rich Rodriguez style offense. Yeah, I'm more with you on that. That's not the biggest worry in the world to me.
Yeah, I'd be more afraid of a Kelly Bryant.
Exactly. You know, that's good. That's a good point. And speaking of Kelly Bryant, you know, people are already making comparisons. Kelly Bryant's what? He's had six starts now or something, and people are already sort of wondering where Kelly stacks up in terms of quarterbacks ever. But really, specifically, I've noticed some people are already in the camp that Kelly Bryant is a better college quarterback than Drew Locke ever was. They're already saying that. What's your thoughts about that? They're very different players, obviously. How do you compare and contrast them, and do you have a strong feeling on which one do you think is better at this point? Because I'm not sure that I do, to be honest.
Yeah, Drew Locke is a tough one for me to really get a total sense of how good he was. Obviously, the numbers were really good in a couple of seasons. You know, his first season was abysmal, but that wasn't really his fault. That was a 15 dumpster fire, Josh Henson, you know, 1 yard per play offense.
Right, that was a bad offense, and he was a true freshman, yeah. And he was, frankly, lucky to survive.
Yeah, and then the second year was the, you know, run a play every 2 seconds, Josh Heupel offense.
Sure, big adjustment.
And the third year, I think, was the Josh Heupel offense was a little bit better. And then I thought
they tuned it in a lot better as far as the speed went in 2017.
Yeah, I thought he was good in 17. I thought he was good in 18. I know a lot was made about him not winning big games or not winning games against ranked opponents, but I think that's a little bit.
I agree.
That's too much on him. And not enough on
the whole team.
The whole team, and you know, particularly the coaching staff in certain situations we've talked about, where it seemed like we weren't prepared certain times. And so I mean, he's got a lot more yards to get before I can't. Let him finish the whole season, and then I'll tell you. I guess if I feel like I don't think there's a game yet that he's won for us, and there's also not a game that he's lost for us. So he's been a steady hand to me, and he's been better throwing than I expected him to be. But I don't have a sense of where Kelly Bryant goes into the pantheon. But I don't, you know, Drew Locke for me is, you know, he's not Chase Daniel, he's not Brad Smith, he's probably not Corby Jones, in terms of how important he was to the success of the team that he was on. So I'm not ready to put Kelly Bryant up with those three.
Me neither. He's probably in the conversation, like you say, with you know, with Blaine Gabbert and Drew Locke at this point. If you're going to put him into tiers, maybe Franklin, those guys. But yeah, it's hard to then separate
I don't think either one of them is James Franklin for me yet either.
Okay, that's fair. I'm okay with
and
that.
And I actually read this article about Matty Mock. I don't know if you saw the Matter article on Matty Mock. He was really, really good when he first came out.
Absolutely.
I know he kind of, you know, his end of his tenure was a little. You know, clouded in controversy and
the whole offense just went downhill.
Went
too.
To tank, but I mean, I think he wanted a higher percentage than I think almost any Missouri quarterback ever when he first came out. I think people forget how good that kid was at first. So, and these are just recent guys. Like this is throwing out Phil Bradley and
of course
other guys that we've had play the position before.
Pitching Paul Christmas,
exactly. He's on the wall. So
right.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm not ready to rank him in the pantheon yet. But I think Drew Locke may be at the bottom of those guys that I've mentioned by name so far. For me, just and no disrespect to him, I think he may actually wind up having a better NFL career than any of those guys.
He might.
He has the tools to do it. He was just here at a tough time for him. You know, with all the.
Yeah, a huge transition period. Yeah. Not only did the team go in the tank in 2015. Obviously, we don't need to rehash the protests and all that, but that's just an enormous factor. And, well, I mean, you've seen in our attendance for the past few years. You know, Mizzou hasn't – hopefully, we're starting to get over that now. Hopefully, you know, we saw a huge crowd at Ole Miss against Ole Miss at homecoming this past weekend. Hopefully, that's a sign that people are hopping back on the bandwagon and, you know – maybe we're getting new fans if the old fans who went away are still bitter. But yeah. I think the bitterness is starting to fade away a little bit. And you know, just one thing I'll say, just from terms of a psychology dynamic, it's kind of interesting the people I think that are already rushing to put Kelly Bryant ahead of Drew Locke. They may be ultimately right, but I think, you know, who's Kelly really played so far? No offense. I mean, the toughest games, the games where maybe Drew Locke didn't do his best against Georgia at times, for instance.
Well, there's a reason that you don't do as well against Georgia.
That's my
as
point.
You do.
Exactly. It's like, yeah, they're better competition. It's obvious. It's not this. It's they're not SEMO. I mean, to be hyperbolic about the whole thing.
Let's hope Kelly Bryant can have the success against Florida that Drew Locke did.
I was going to say if he has that kind of game against Florida or Georgia or heaven forbid both, be still my beating heart. I should stay. I mean, then I'll be ready to start moving Kelly up the ranks. But you know, it's just funny. We've got this one season with him, and I really like the kid a lot. But it's really hard to put this in perspective. I mean, it's sort of the ultimate short sample size career that he's going to have here. But I'm just enjoying the Kelly Bryant experience so far. I can tell you that right now.
Yeah, I like him a lot, and I've been surprised that you know there are times where people have seemed like they've come down pretty hard on him, particularly you know like the first half of the South Carolina game or the where people are just, you know, particularly on, you know, Twitter and Facebook and all that. And people are throwing out hot takes about how he can't pass, et cetera. I think that's short-sighted. I don't know. I kind of liked that, you know, our focus when we've been talking about these games has not particularly – it's not been just on Kelly Bryant but on this Missouri team as a whole. And, I think that's makes this a stronger team. I tend to not focus as much on blaming or crediting one guy for the wins and losses of a football team that has 80-something players on it.
Right.
I mean, I got into it with some guy on Twitter, some handicapper guy the other day, because he said that, you know, Deshaun Watson might not do it as prettily as Patrick Mahomes does, but he's a better winner. And
right.
I said,
Based
on what? Oh, because he just beat him head-to-head?
Sure.
Well, head-to-head is a stupid thing to even ever say in the NFL, because it's nothing is head-to-head.
Right, and Deshaun, well, I could come back just as easily and say, well, Deshaun Watson's never made an AFC championship.
He's never won a playoff game.
Yeah, so that and that would be stupid, too, to hang over Deshaun Watson.
Well, then he went to his college career. I'm like, well, Mahomes played for Texas Tech.
Right.
And Watson played for an NFL factory.
I was
going to
say,
Clemson,
you think maybe that you put Patrick Mahomes on that Clemson team.
Yeah, they
might have won a few games, I think. Yeah. So I mean, that's just silly.
I think the quarterback position, and it's going to be a glamour position because, you know, you got the ball in your hand every time, just like, you know, even to a greater degree than, you know, a baseball starter is going to get credit, you know, for wins or losses because they have the ball in their hand for, you know, majority of the game too, for half the game basically. But there's just too much made of quarterbacks generally. You have to have a good one. You have to have a good one. If you don't have a good quarterback, you're screwed.
Done.
But I think the difference between a good quarterback and, you know, some – I don't know. We can go back to the Trevor Lawrence thing. Like, he's been okay this year. Everyone wanted to say he was the greatest freshman quarterback in history last year. I mean, he's a part of a big team, and the team makes him better. And the team's not been as, you know, transcendent as it was last year. It's not Trevor Lawrence's fault altogether. His, you know, numbers that you're seeing from his performances are a reflection of the overall strength of the team.
Yeah, there's a lot of that in football. It's such a symbiotic thing where, you know, if you're take the offensive line and the quarterback relationship, your quarterback can help out your offensive line a lot if he just gets rid of the football. But if he holds on to the ball forever, he's going to make your offensive line look bad, and vice versa. If the offensive line can't block anybody, it doesn't matter how good your quarterback is.
Look at Jared Goff last year. Goff was with top 3 or 4 quarterbacks in the NFL last year. This year, and he had a good offensive line. This year, his offensive line is terrible.
Right.
And, you know, he threw for 70 yards last week because that 49er front four just tore up the offensive line of the Rams.
Sure did.
So, you know, the guy also has the highest paid contract now in the history of the sport. And he threw for 78 yards. And it's not because he sucks. It's because, you know, the offense is not working.
Right.
There's nothing he can do about it.
Right. Yeah, and I'll just say, too, to close out the Kelly Drew comparison a little bit. I know certainly Drew had some just egregious turnovers at times in his career.
Oh, yeah.
And we've seen that. We've seen Kelly's capable of doing that at times early in his career too. So that comparison is not totally
Drew has the two worst
inaccurate
ones.
There.
The two worst ones I can remember.
Right.
I think.
And by the way, you mentioned looking at Mizzou Twitter or the message boards during a game or something. My God, that was a horrible mistake. Never do that. If you think Twitter and, you know, Power Mizzou message boards, all that stuff, you think it's a cesspool in normal times? Look at it during the game, and your eyeballs will, like, melt out of your head. I mean, it's that bad. It's just, whoa, people are horrible. People are horrible on the internet.
Yeah, and the second drive of a game, you know, and it's over.
Fire everyone.
Yeah, it's crazy.
It's the best. I love it. Well, anyway, I think that's enough for today, pal. Let's get out of here until the next time where we give you, of course, more Mizzou topic, more Mizzou talk, I should say, right here on Locked On Mizzou. Hopefully we'll get the Vanderbilt perspective in for you as well. So until next time, I'm John Miller for Blake Stark, and this has been Locked On Mizzou.